What's POST stand for? Piece of shit training?
Set you up for that one. I have no idea. I didn't look it up, but I'm going to go with your explanation.
Welcome, everybody, to State of Murder and our 22nd episode. Are we 22 states in?
I think we are.
All right. So, yeah, we're on our 22nd episode. We're making our way through the states. We're almost halfway through the country, which seems like we're pretty far, like, to the east already, but that's because in the East Coast, everything's all stuffed in.
Yeah, all jumbled up, like, pushed all to smushed. Smushed small states.
Smushed together. So that's going to be fun to figure out how we're going to do our little zigzag when everything's all funny shaped.
Yes. Yeah, it was easy to go up and down. But now we're going to we're going to have to kind of just...
Now we're going...
Serpentine through the whole thing.
Yeah. So we are in Minnesota, don't you know, this week. And I am so sorry to anybody from Minnesota who's listening, because I'm going to keep doing that little funny voice, because Bobby's World was my favorite show growing up, or one of my favorite shows growing up. I feel like it doesn't get the love it deserves.
Oh, I watched Bobby's World and I was older than you. I loved it.
I know. I love Bobby's World. Like, with his little tricycle and Howie Mandel with his Jerry Curl hairstyle.
Didn't he wear red overalls too?
Bobby did, yeah. And I think they had a little yellow
bun. Head.
Mm-hmm. Didn't he have like a little octopus toy or something like that he carried around?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so if you've never seen Bobby's World, do yourself a favor and look it up. It's probably, you could probably find an episode of it somewhere on the internet or on YouTube. But Bobby's World is the greatest. But his mom talked like that, very Minnesota and very like, that was her thing. She would always say, "Don't ya know?" And like, it was just like my favorite thing. That's like one of the things I remember from that show. Have you been to Minnesota before? I have not been to Minnesota before.
I have not been to Minnesota. I know very little.
Okay, we had another state.
I know very little about Minnesota.
Our cases are in two different cities, so we'll learn a good amount about Minnesota.
That's true.
Hopefully with our fun facts today. But yeah, so we had two new cases. Also, thank you to everyone who checked us out on centralvalleytalk.com. And we mentioned it last week, but we did an interview. So as soon as it's all edited, we will post it to the website, and you should be able to look it up on YouTube. So you can check out our interview. If you're listening to this on the day this episode comes out on Thursday, you still have a few more days to check it out on their Facebook page, centralvalleytalk.com. And you can watch us talk about our cases and talk about our podcasts and a little bit more about us. So, also too, even though it looks like we're really close to the host of that show, we were not sitting that close.
No.
John said, he goes, "It looked like you were right, like next to him. Like if you reached out, you could have like high-fived him." And I'm like, we were not that close.
No, we're definitely social distancing from him. We didn't really social distance from each other, but Selena and I are very careful about who we're around. And so we trusted each other. Normally we aren't around each other though. So we're still recording this from separate rooms and we don't get to see each other near as much. So it's sad.
It is. It's very sad. But hey, we're bringing you guys episodes. This is the happy part of the week, is we get to record together and talk about true crime and talk to you guys for an hour and a half is usually where our episodes are at. So,
that's because I think both of us like to talk. So when you have two hosts that love to talk and like share things, it's like finding short. Although this week might be a little bit shorter, because normally my stories are like typed like 3.5 single space typed pages, and my story is not that long today. So
mine's gonna have some discussion, so I think we're gonna balance out,
because
the case I found is definitely gonna lead to some discussion afterwards. But let's start with your story. What do you got for us this week?
All right. So this week I'm going to be sharing with you all about the murder of Nancy Daugherty, I think is how you pronounce her last name. It's Daugherty. So Nancy was born and raised in Chisholm, Minnesota. So she worked as an aide at the nursing home there and also volunteered as an EMT. So both jobs I would never do. I don't like blood, and honestly, I'm not very comfortable around the elderly. So so more power to somebody that has that calling. So yeah. Nancy was very outgoing, and she totally had a passion for helping others. So Selena and I can... That part we get.
Yes.
So she had two children, and in 1986, she was getting a divorce from her husband, Jim, and she was planning on moving to Minneapolis on July 16th of 1986. So she wanted to move there. Her daughter had just graduated high school. I'm not quite sure. She has a son, too. I never saw how old he was, if he was younger or older than his sister. So Nancy was 38 at the time. So she wanted to kind of make a change in her life since she was getting a divorce. And so she was moving to Minneapolis to become a paramedic. So I don't really understand the difference between a paramedic and an EMT, but...
I know there's like a slight difference between the two in terms of like qualifications.
Oh, I'm sure.
I will look it up. You continue your story and I'll figure it out.
And also before she was just volunteering as an EMT, so becoming a paramedic, I'm guessing, is a step up from that. So her daughter, Gina, shared a story about how once on a family trip, they went to Alaska and there was an accident that they had witnessed. And she ended up helping the victims until they could all be airlifted to a hospital. So she just was always kind of looking out for everybody, as many would do before they were moving away. So every time I've moved places, you kind of want to get together with your friends. And so that's what she was doing on the night of July 15th. She was getting ready to go out with her friends. So they were at her house when she received a phone call, and her friends told about this. And there were a couple different articles. One, when I talk about, they don't give names of friends. One did mention that one of them was her boyfriend, but then all the other articles that mention him says it's just a friend. So boyfriend, friend, not sure. But while they were waiting to leave, she ended up getting a phone call, and all she said to the other person on the other end was that she couldn't talk at this time and to call back later. And so everybody was kind of like wondering who that person was, but she, I guess, was a pretty private person when it came to her personal life.
Okay.
So she ended up staying out until about 1 a.m. that morning, so kind of a good time, hanging out with her friends, kind of just getting ready to say goodbye. So she went back, so boyfriend or friend, not sure, dropped her off at her house at 1 a.m., and then he had planned to come back at 8 that morning to help Nancy move out of her house. However, he remembered after he had left. So he left, and then he remembered he needed to ask her something, and these aren't the days of the cell phones because it was in the 80s. So he actually had to go back to her house, and so he knocked on the door, and she answered the door, but she had completely changed her outfit. Not like she'd gotten into her pajamas, but like just like totally like she was ready to go out again. And so he thought that was really kind of strange, but he talked to her for a little bit, and then he ended up leaving. Around 3 a.m., so about 2 hours after Nancy got home, a couple of girls were walking by Nancy's house when they heard someone scream. Then they heard what they described as kind of a struggle and the sounds of somebody choking. So the girls didn't end up stopping to see what was happening inside of Nancy's house. They didn't even call the police. They just continued to walk home. So, and it was kind of interesting because I was actually listening to True Crime Obsessed podcast this week, kind of catching up on my Patreon. And they're currently discussing the documentary I'll Be Gone in the Dark, which is about the Golden State Killer being caught. And in that, Michelle McNamara, so she was the reporter, Patton Oswalt's wife, so she was the reporter that kind of helped with the case, and she wrote the book. And so she kind of was talking about how in the 70s, people just really didn't call the police when they saw something suspicious. So she wasn't really surprised, because that kind of happened a lot with the Golden State Killer, is that people saw him jumping over fences and all these suspicious things, but nobody ever called him about it. And he kind of was in the 70s and the 80s. So I think, I'm guessing that that could kind of be true in this case as well. So in the 80s, people just didn't get involved. So domestic, maybe they thought it was a domestic dispute or anything. And also, according to the articles, it said, it kept saying girls. And I think one of the articles I read said that they were teenage girls. So I'm not sure how old they were. It was 3 in the morning though. But anyway, So I'm guessing they just kind of were pretty young and just decided to walk on and not kind of question. Also, I'd probably be a little bit scared if I heard that as a teenager, not sure what to do. So I'm not quite sure why the girls didn't call the police, but, you know, just a lot of speculation. So it was now around 8 a.m. when Nancy's friend slash boyfriend, not sure, came back to her house to help her move. When he arrived, he noticed that the curtains were closed and the doors were locked, which he thought was odd, but he guessed that she had probably gone out to go get something, so he decided to leave and come back a little bit later. So I don't know if, I know in the Midwest, so I haven't been to Minnesota, but even in the 90s, a lot of people didn't lock their doors and stuff, so maybe that was the thing, especially when you're, if you were home. And then I guess she
didn't. And if you're in a small town.
Yeah, you just know everybody. Like I was mentioning, the small town in Nebraska that my family's from, they to this day don't lock their doors. So you can just go in, just walk in, So, hello. So I can see why he would probably think that was pretty odd, especially back then. Mm-hmm. So when he came back later that morning, there was still no answer. And so he became more concerned. So he and I saw also a neighbor kind of was involved with this, ended up calling the police and requesting that they did a wellness check on Nancy. So when the police arrived at the home, they forced their way into the house and Nancy was found in her bedroom laying on the bed. Her body was covered with grass stains and the police reported that that made them believe that there had been a struggle outside as well as inside the house, and it was on her body. The grass stains were on her body, not on her clothes. So, So Nancy had been beaten, raped, and ended up being strangled. So that the strangulation was the cause of death. Now, many would think to look at Nancy's husband as they were getting a divorce, and always you kind of look close to home. However, it was easy to quickly dismiss him as he was out of the country when Nancy was murdered. As I'm not sure where her kids were at this point, but as the police started collecting the evidence, there was DNA that was found underneath Nancy's fingernails, so she obviously tried to fight back. And then they also found male bodily fluids on her body, so I'm guessing he didn't use a condom.
Yeah, so there you go, some DNA.
So this is still in the 80s, though, so as we've talked about, DNA's in its infancy. So, however, the DNA wasn't ever in the criminal database system. Nancy's house was also hard to process as she had just had, like, remember I just mentioned that her daughter had just graduated high school. So you always have that party. So she had the graduation party. So that left fingerprints all over the house and other people's DNA all over the house. So they couldn't really use a lot of that. So the only thing they really had was on Nancy's body because they knew that that had happened that night.
Yeah.
So Nancy's murder was really hard for the town. So as I mentioned, this is a pretty small town. So Chisholm's only about 5,000 people. So somebody as well known and well liked as Nancy's, her murder was hard to take. So you can read news articles that were covered for her anniversary of her death as time passed. There was not an answer. So there was never an answer on who committed the crime. So 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and then 30 years passed and still no answers for the community or Nancy's family. The police, however, kept checking to see if the killer's DNA was ever in the system. It never popped. They ended up actually testing over 100 men's DNA and tried to follow every lead. They even went down to Texas one time because they had a lead and that came out to be nothing. That changed, however, this year. In 2020. Now, I know we've all talked about the DNA in the previous case. Selena, I'm pretty sure it was in Idaho that we talked about Angie Dodge.
Mm-hmm. And the familial DNA?
Yes. And how familial DNA was used to narrow down the search. I think in that case, though, it narrowed it down and then they kind of turned to somebody else, right, in the family. And then it turned out to be somebody else.
In that one, it was like a distant relative that they didn't even know that they had.
Yeah.
And so it almost got the wrong guy at first.
So, you know, you have to use, like, really be careful. So in this case, they use Parabon Nanolabs, which is the company that analyzes public DNA genealogy databases to find a DNA match. So a familial DNA match. Then they end up covering and, like, looking at family trees, obituaries, birth records. And so this helped them. And they finally kind of put their sights on one man. So when Parabon identified this man to the police ended up going and collecting a bag of garbage outside of his house, which they'd watched him throw away.
That's how they get them.
I know. It's like you ought to be careful with your trash. So they ended up running his DNA, and it was a match, a perfect match for the DNA they had on file. So the 52-year-old Michael Carbo Jr. was arrested and charged on July 30th. So that's literally just a week ago.
Wow.
Now, he has not been found guilty of Nancy's murder at this time because he was just arrested. So we can't say he's guilty of the crime necessarily because he hasn't been found guilty. But they did say his DNA matched.
Yeah. And at this point, with them waiting so long, it's not like they're just rounding up suspects. It's like they're going to make sure they have all their ducks in a row before they go after who they think it is.
Oh, absolutely. So Carbo was only 18 years old when Nancy was murdered. He actually lived only one block away from Nancy's house, and he even was attending the same high school as Nancy's children. He had no other major criminal history, which is why his DNA never popped in the criminal database, and there really isn't much else known about him. Not really important, but just, yeah, they haven't shared a lot about him, but just keep in mind, like, they just identified that he was even a suspect, so he was never on the police's radar as a possibility. So I don't know if he's had, like, maybe he just has never been caught. I have no idea. It seems like a real, if this is the first offense and the only offense, that seems really violent. And I don't know. It just doesn't seem like this would possibly be his first or only offense, but maybe.
Yeah.
So Carbo's bail was set as for $1 million, and his first court hearing is actually the day this episode comes out, so August 6th. Okay. Maybe during the trial, we will find out why Nancy died that night. This is actually the very first case in Minnesota where the suspect was caught just like Golden State Killer was, with familial DNA. So if anyone has been following GSK, I don't know if you guys noticed, but he pled guilty last month, so for raping and murdering many women in California in the 1970s and 80s. So I just want to, the hard work that it took to catch him and how many years it took to catch him is, you know, a similar amount of years that it took to catch Carbo. So there's some great things happening. And so DNA is very important. And if you do want to put your family's DNA, make sure that you guys put it in, if you get it done, Ancestry.com or any of those, that you opt into the GED match, which allows your familial DNA to be used in criminal cases. So just some knowledge there. But that's the story of Nancy and how her family didn't ever give up hope that they would, the whole community never gave up hope. They just kept trying to figure out who killed him, and it took 34 years to figure it out, but finally her family and the whole community as a whole have some answers.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear that justice is now way closer than it was, so yeah, that's great to hear.
So, and it'll be interesting because I'm sure, because this is Minnesota's first case like this, that it's going to be in the news for them. And so we'll be able to kind of follow along. You can look into it as it goes to see what happens to Carbo. So I'm sure I'll check in. Maybe we'll do an update later on.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll keep up to date with it. All right. Well, thank you. My story this week, like I said, it's a little bit more discussion involved with it, but I thought it was important to share, even though it did get some media attention when it happened. So Justine Damond was born on April 4th, 1977, and Damond is her married name, by the way, but she was born on April 4th, 1977 in New South Wales, Australia. She graduated from the University of Sydney as a veterinarian, so like not just any vet, but like an animal surgeon. And she was known to be a really big animal lover. She was constantly caring for animals, even to her. There's video of her like rescuing baby ducklings, like putting them in her shirt to carry them to safety so they could get back to their mother. And her fiance, Don, even shared a story about how she put like masking tape on the bottom half of the window, the home, the door in their home in Minneapolis to prevent the rescue dogs they had from crashing into it, because she said they didn't know really what windows were because they were rescues.
Yeah.
And she didn't want them, like, bumping into it. So, super cute and super loving. But after getting her degree, she decided to pursue personal health as a career path instead. She had some experience in her family for addiction, depression, even cancer. And so she took an interest in using things like meditation and yoga to help with cope with these conditions. And so her and Dawn met during a meditation seminar in Colorado in 2012, and they fell quickly in love. Dawn even recalls it being like love at first sight for him.
So real quick, so she wasn't a veterinarian anymore, or she was doing that, but then she was just focusing like on herself?
So I don't think she ever even practiced as a veterinarian. She went through all that schooling, and then something changed and she followed her calling to do yoga and meditation. So she was actually working on like the credentials and stuff that you need for that.
Oh, okay.
So like, you know, you go through all of those, the trainings and stuff. So the two became engaged just 3 years later in 2015 and were set to be married in August of 2017. The two had originally decided to move to Australia, but ended up settling in the Fulton neighborhood of Minneapolis, which is like a middle class, low crime area in Minneapolis, because Dawn's son Zach was worried about his dad being so far away, like all the way on the other side of the world, basically.
Yeah.
So on July 15th, 2017, Justine Damon heard screams coming from the alley behind her neighbor's house. So there was like this alley behind all the houses. It said directly her neighbor's, so it wasn't right behind her house. She believed it was a woman being sexually assaulted. So she called her fiance Dawn around 11:30, because at this time he was at like a business meeting or training or something in Vegas, so he wasn't home. She described on the phone with him that what sounded like a woman in distress, like that something was going on, maybe she was being sexually assaulted or something. She could hear her screaming, and he suggested calling the police. And so
that would be my, why are you calling and telling somebody that? Just call the cops.
I think she was kind of maybe looking for him to reassure her, because maybe her first instinct was to call the cops, but then she was like, oh, what if it's just this woman having sex and like I call the cops on that, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You kind of don't want to immediately assume. So that's my guess as to why she called him, to just be like, hey, I'm hearing these sounds and I'm not sure. So he suggested calling the police, so she agreed and got off the phone to call 911. After almost 10 minutes with no police arriving, Justine called again to make sure she had given them the correct address. After confirming the address with the dispatcher, she called Dawn once more to update him on what was happening. She was still hearing the woman in distress when suddenly she told him that the police had arrived and she hung up. This would be the last time that they spoke, because just 1 minute and 19 seconds later, Justine would be laying in the alleyway dying from a gunshot wound to the abdomen.
What? Okay.
So police officers Mohammed Noor, 31, and his partner Matthew Harity, 25, were responding to the call categorized as unknown trouble, female screaming, which is apparently listed as a low priority call, which I'm sorry, but if someone said that they think someone's being sexually assaulted and that a woman is screaming and they've called twice, I feel like we need to bump up the priority level here. But anyway, that aside. So the two were driving through the alley with the lights on their Ford Explorer off, and they heard no signs of trouble. Nora entered a code 4, which is basically like to say the scene is safe, into the computer in the vehicle when the two heard a loud sound near the cruiser. Justine approached the driver's side window where Harity was sitting, and he drew his weapon but pointed it downward and didn't fire at her. Nora fired once through the open window and struck her in the abdomen. She was unarmed and barefoot. The officers began CPR, but 20 minutes later, she was gone.
What the heck?
Harity later informed his supervisor, and so just keep in mind too, and I'll talk about it again, but just to let you guys know in case you're all wondering, like, what the heck is going on? All the information that we're getting is from the two men, and so we don't really know the whole situation. But anyway, let me continue, but just to let you know, that's where the information is coming from.
So from the police officers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Harity later informed his supervisor that both men had, quote, got spooked and that they feared an ambush, which is why they both drew their guns. I know. So both officers had their body cams turned off.
Of course they did.
Because despite introducing body cams the previous year, their activation was not required for all situations. There's no recording of the incident except for a cell phone video, which I couldn't find, taken by a teenager who was on their bike just after the shooting. So they didn't actually see what happened. My guess is that they saw the police officers doing CPR. The next day, a vigil was set up to honor Justine in the alleyway where she died. A memorial service was held on August 11th, 2017. So the ACLU soon issued a statement condemning the non-use of the body cameras and was met with counters from the Blue Lives Matter activists stating that since the officers were conducting a simple area check, there was no reason to use them. Which, let me just clarify, that it was not a simple area check. Someone had called saying a woman was screaming.
They thought it was a sexual assault.
Yeah, if you think you're mad now, wait till you hear what Michelle Bachmann has to say. So for those of you who don't know, Michelle Bachmann is a Republican. Didn't she try running for president at some point? Wasn't she on one of the...
Yeah, I think she was when Trump was.
Yeah. So she also had something to say during the 8th Annual Hog Roast and Republican Gubernatorial Forum, which is a name I had to type that all out because I thought that was a ridiculous thing. But she stated that Knorr was an affirmative action hire and also told WorldNet Daily, which is a very, like, it's considered a fringe, super conservative, far-right web show.
Yeah.
That, quote, Knorr comes from the mandated cover-up women culture. She's speaking about the Muslim, like, the hijabs and things like that. That's what she's referencing. That's why I'm wondering if they'll ask whether his cultural views led him to shoot her. That's something, if true, I can't imagine the progressives would allow that to get out. End quote. Which, there's so many things wrong with that statement, but...
I feel like my face is starting to get red.
Yeah.
I'm like, calm it down, Amber. My blood pressure's rising. Okay, just breathe through it.
Yep, this is how I feel while I was reading it. I was getting, like, it... was so upsetting to even type this down because I was just like, oh my god, there are so many things with that. First off, I hate when people say that people are affirmative action hires. Oh, yeah. That's ridiculous. Secondly, his cultural views have nothing to do, like, in a split second he shot her. I doubt he had any sort of time to see what she looked like or even if she was a woman. He just instinctively shot somebody.
My concern more is the fact that police officers were too spooked. Like, what?
I know.
Like, then you're not in the right job. Like, you need some, you know, a little, I'm just going from what I think. Like, you need to have a little more bravery than that. You are in a car. Like, you could drive away. Like, why did you, why, and what was with the thought also of the ambush? Like, who is wanting to ambush you? What are they talking about?
And apparently, if they were even thinking that an ambush was likely, why was their window rolled down and why were their body cams not on? Because that would be indicating that something more serious is happening in the area.
And why would they put an all clear already? The code 4 or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ugh,
this seems like a whole bunch of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle Bachmann just didn't need to put her 2 cents into any of this. Shut up and sit down.
She really didn't. The only reason she did is I guess she used to represent that area. Because it's like the St. Cloud, Minneapolis area. So that's where she was representing. Before, she wasn't representing it at the time, I don't believe. So Australia's prime minister at the time said, quote, how can a woman out in the street in her pajamas seeking assistance from the police be shot like that? We are demanding answers on behalf of her family. Which, thank you, Australian Prime Minister. Yes, how exactly could that happen? It's insane, because she called twice.
Yeah.
And all she was doing was trying to help whatever. And by the way, I never knew what else happened. I don't know what happened to the woman who was apparently being sexually assaulted. They never talked about that ever again, so I don't know. So just to give you, because of Michelle Bachmann's comments, I did want to give you just a tiny bit of background on the police officer who shot Justine. So Mohammed Noor was born in Somalia and moved to the States at some point. It didn't really give me when. And he had been praised by Mayor Betsy Hodges and the local Somali community in Minneapolis for being one of the first Somali American police officers in the area. He had started with the police department just 21 months before the shooting, and it was said that his training had been fast-tracked with him attending a 7-month immersive cadet program. This is basically a way for departments to quickly diversify their police forces by allowing candidates who have a college degree to enter law enforcement. And obviously, like, after everything happened, the Minneapolis Police Department was like, no, we don't fast track people. Here's what being a cadet is versus being like a police officer. So I guess you can enter the academy two ways, as a cadet or as some type of officer. And the officer thing means you've gone through school and you've done the class and it's like a longer program. Whereas, and this is verbatim on their website, to be hired as a police cadet, you must have a 2 or 4 year degree in any discipline from a regionally accredited college or university, which, first off, I don't think you need just any degree to be a police officer. So that's mistake number one with this cadet program, that it, by this logic, me and you could go to Minneapolis and be hired as a police cadet because we have 4 year degrees in a discipline at a regionally accredited college or university.
I feel like we would be not like more, like at least some qualified. We would be just way because, more qualified. But I went, what was his degree in? And also it said 2 or 4 years, so an associate's degree counts too, which, okay. But what was
his degree? Can't you get your 2 year degree in like general ed? Like, yeah. You really don't need a whole lot of stuff. But anyway, and then in addition to the college, you must not have passed the POST licensing exam because the city will pay for you to complete the certificate courses through a program, which includes skill training simultaneously as they go through the police department's in-house academy. This academic training is comparable to the training recruits receive before being hired by the Minnesota Police Department. Or Minneapolis Police Department, sorry. This lasts approximately 8 months. Cadets are promoted to police officer upon successful completion of the POST board academic and skills requirements. From there, they enter the field training program. And it's they try to say that the cadet program started back in 1989 and has helped the police department hire a number of highly qualified and decorated officers, including many of our current chiefs, inspectors, and commanders. So I did want to include that just so that we know it wasn't like they were like, oh, you can skip a bunch of classes. But I believe that if you're going to be a police officer, which is a very, and I will admit, it is a very high stress job that requires a lot of precision and a lot of high, like, critical thinking in high stress situations, you should not only be trained for 8 months.
No.
There should be no reason that we are letting people have access to a weapon and to go out in high stress situations and make these decisions after only being trained for 8 months.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, these are life and death situations, and I'm trying to think of, like, comparable training. And I know people, like, I've seen posts and everything on Facebook about, you know, talking about training and then, like, the equivalent of stuff, and that people always respond, well, you know, they get on-the-job training. And I'm like, yeah, so do cosmetology students. And and they continue their education, but it's also not life or death. It's, I mean, I mean, that's a good job too, but I'm like, this is like such a high level job that
it's so frustrating. How would you feel if your doctor, who was supposed to perform your brain surgery, only trained for 8 months, but then had on the job training? Like, no, you would not trust that person with your life. And like you said, cosmetologists do train for a lot longer than that. And you're right. It's nowhere near as stressful a situation to cut somebody's hair as opposed to holding somebody's life in your hands, which is essentially what police officers do in certain situations. They choose whether people live or die. So, yeah, so I'm not too upset with the Sun Tribune saying it was fast-tracked, because to me that seems way too quick. Whether it was intentional or not, that's still way too quick. So, in his short 2 years at the department, Knorr had racked up 3 formal complaints, 2 of which were pending resolution. He was also being sued for allegedly assaulting a woman while on duty. Oh, God. And then I did read that the Sun Tribune reported that psychologists and stuff had warned the police department that he shouldn't be on the field, but I only found that in one thing. I couldn't find anything, and I'm not too familiar with the Sun Tribune, so I didn't want to hold what they said. Like, yeah. Super thing, especially because I couldn't find it anywhere else. So maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. So during the investigation, it was stated, upon police arrival, a female slaps the back of a patrol car. After that, it is unknown to the BCA, which is the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, what exactly happened. But the female became deceased in the alley. And I'm like, what a useless statement. She hit the car, but we don't know what happened, but now she's dead. Really?
There seems also, to be a lot of steps in between that we need to know about. Like,
we missed, yeah. Also, too, later on in the trial, the prosecutor even mentioned that there was no forensic evidence that she even touched the car. Oh. So I don't know if she just came up to the window or if she actually hit the car. I don't know, but every article I read, like I said, we're getting the information from them. It all said that she hit the car.
So what?
I know. So the BCA agents also obtained another search warrant for Justine's home. And while they didn't take anything, they stated that they were searching for evidence, things like bodily fluids, controlled substances, and writing, which I wasn't sure what that was. Huh. But it was very controversial that they were searching her apartment because it had nothing to do with that. And by them including controlled substances, it makes me think that they were trying to find a way to say that she was, like, on drugs, and she came at them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is really, really messed up.
Poor Dawn is probably like, damn, why did I tell her to call the police? Like,
right? But who thinks that? Like, who thinks, oh, I'm going to call the cops to help some other person and they're going to kill me?
Yeah. That's my fear right now, though, because as we see and as we hear more and more and come across more and more shitty police officers, like, you almost mm-hmm. have to, even if you're concerned about somebody, like, kind of go in your mind of, okay, what could possibly happen if I call the cops, what could happen? And, like, that's just sad because they're supposed to be there to protect and serve. And now it's like, wait, should I call them? Because they could kill somebody.
Yeah, like, that happened to us. We have a neighbor nearby and he's elderly. And there was a guy hanging around by his truck in his driveway. And he was, like, leaned up against it. And I was like, oh, like, I'd feel really bad if they stole his car. Because it almost looked like they were trying to get in the truck.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'd feel really bad. But then I even had a moment of hesitation because it was, like, a young guy. And he was African-American. And then my neighbor is also African-American. I have no idea what the situation is. So it gave me pause. Like, I did end up calling the police just to say, hey, like, my neighbor's elderly and someone's, like, messing with his car. I don't know. Because, again, like, I would feel terrible if I saw somebody stealing my neighbor's car and I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
And so, luckily, the cop was good. He just, like, drove by. The guy had left by that point and he talked to my neighbor and turns out it was someone related to my neighbor. And so he said it was, like, it was all good. And the cops were, like, very cordial with him. They even called me back to say that everything was okay, and I was like, okay. But just that I have to second guess that these people who are here to protect both me and my neighbor mm-hmm. would potentially hurt my neighbor or somebody, because that was also my fear, is like, what if my neighbor comes out and they go after him too? Like, so I
sometimes think, like, before you call the cops, so I called the cops at work a couple months, like, before COVID mm-hmm. And because this guy was in our parking lot in the early in the morning and he jumped out in front of my car and was like mm-hmm. going booga, booga, booga. And he was under the influence. And then I called the cops as soon as I got into the office, and I could literally not describe him after he had been booga, booga, boogin in front of my car for, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes, and I couldn't move, and he was just doing it in front of the car. And so, but I'm like, he did that. And I couldn't tell you his ethnicity. I was like, sunburned. Yeah. Like, I didn't know. 'Cause, like, he just was mm-hmm. just weathered, but I didn't know. I literally tried to describe what he was wearing, and then when the police finally came and got him, it was totally a different outfit than what he was wearing. So I had to come out and like be like, yeah, that's him. Because I said he was wearing red shorts and a blue shirt, and he was wearing like jeans and like a black shirt.
Yeah, and then it goes to that too, that where we're not really seeing what we think we are. Because we could be 100% confident that, that's what this person looks like, and then it's not at all them.
Yeah. And what if I was totally way off, so what if somebody would have been walking down the street and then non-compliant? You know? It's like, ugh. So, I very much second guess whether or not to call the police ever.
Yeah, and that's not at all how it should be.
No.
So Knorr did not speak to investigators, invoking the Fifth Amendment and, like, his right against self-incrimination. And both officers were put on paid administrative leave.
Oh, God.
Yep. On March 20th, 2018, a warrant was finally issued for third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter charges, and Knorr turned himself in and resigned from the Minneapolis Police Department. And so, just to clarify, so Minnesota and a few other states have third-degree murder. So most places will do first and second degree, which is basically like premeditated or not premeditated. Yeah. But Minnesota has third-degree murder, which is basically like, it says it's a person causing the death of another by perpetrating an act imminently dangerous to others and without regard for human life, but without intent. So it's basically like you were super reckless and you did something that could kill somebody, but you didn't purposely intend to do that. You weren't like, oh, I'm doing this to hurt somebody. I know.
I'm pretty sure he purposefully shot her.
Sure he did too. Yeah. And then just to clarify too, second degree manslaughter is saying that is whoever by culpable negligence, whereby he creates an unreasonable risk and consciously takes the chance of causing death. So basically like, you created an unreasonable risk to, and you knew it could kill or seriously hurt somebody. So it said later charges would be upgraded to second degree murder, but I just saw that in one place again, and that wasn't what he ended up being charged with. So, or not charged with, but convicted of. So on April 30th, 2019, Knorr was convicted of third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter, becoming the first Minnesota police officer to be convicted of murder. Which, what the fuck?
And do you think that that's because, does race play a part in that? Probably.
We are going to talk about this.
Oh, great. Good. Good.
So
not only am I angry with him, police department, Michelle Bachmann, now I'm going to be really angry because he got some sort of... Man, this makes me feel a lot of confusions.
It does. So the Somali American Police Association claimed racial bias was a contributing factor to his conviction. And in May of 2019, Knorr's attorneys tried for an acquittal on both charges, citing insufficient evidence. Because again, like, there wasn't a whole lot other than what they said. On June 7th, 2019, however, he was sentenced to 12 and a half years in prison. After the sentencing, Knorr made this statement. I have lived with this, and I'll continue to live with this. I caused this tragedy, and it is my burden. I wish, though, that I could relieve that burden others feel from the loss that I caused. I cannot, and that is a troubling reality for me. The depth of my error has only increased from that moment on. Working to save her life and watching her slip away is a feeling I can't explain. I can say it leaves me sad, it leaves me numb, and a feeling of being incredibly lonely. But none of those words capture what it truly feels like. So he was definitely remorseful, which is a nice change because not many cops are remorseful.
Yeah.
So following the shooting, Mayor Betsy Hodges removed Janae Hartu, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, as chief of police, stating that the mayor and the city had lost confidence in her ability to lead, and acting police chief Madaria Arredondo, who I believe is still the police chief, announced that police officers would be required to turn on body cams during all calls and traffic stops. Because the mayor fired the other chief of police, however, though, she did not win her re-election, and they cite that as being a really big reason why. And the president of the police officers union in Minneapolis, Bob Kroll, objected to the body cams being on at all times, saying that officers' discussion of tactics on the way to a call should not be publicly disseminated, which is just...
Why? Like,
what are they possibly talking about?
And also, plotting why something, would anyone... probably.
And why would anyone care what they're talking about if, like, you need to be held accountable to your actions? Mm-hmm. 3 days after Nora's sentencing, the city of Minneapolis settled with the Damond family to pay $20 million because they ended up, they had sued claiming, like, it was, like, a civil rights violation because she got murdered by the police. So, okay. So, now that... That was the whole story. Definitely, I did mention there was something to talk about because, if anyone remembers, George Floyd was just murdered in Minneapolis. And I believe all of the officers have been arrested. Mm-hmm. But I don't think any of them have gone to trial yet. And I can't remember what the charges were for them. I want to say they got some degree... murder, right?
I think first it's or second. I think it's second degree. Or at least the one, whoever that was. Chauvin. I don't even know his name, but yeah, that one had the real ass.
The only reason I remember it is because his last name's Chauvin, and he's a chauvinistic pig.
Oh, that's, so yeah.
That's how it's going to stick in my mind. So the reason I picked this case is because of those kind of similarities, right? It was a cop acting just like blindly. Like, although... Chauvin was, I would say that was way more premeditated, that he was just like, there's no way you can hold somebody down for that long with and not know that you're going to kill them. But
yeah,
definitely looking at the race of this, she was a young, blonde, Australian woman in a middle-class, low-crime community, and the officer was Somalian. He wasn't a white guy, which... Granted, the other Minneapolis police officers, the other officer that killed George Floyd, he was Asian American, I believe. So, but then it does beg that question of, like, is race the reason he got 12 and a half years? The reason he was the first officer to get arrested for murder? Because you know there were more officers that killed people before him.
Oh, yeah.
And is this why it became such a thing? And again, not to diminish, like, this is a really good argument of why... We need, like, to defund the police. They should not be handling situations in which they'd react in that way. Or they think about it, if he hadn't have reacted to other calls or been put in a bunch of other stressful situations that he wasn't qualified for, he could have handled this situation so much better. A situation that would require police, right? Somebody could be potentially being assaulted if you're not dealing with the millions of other things going on. But also, too, it was interesting to me that they were in a low crime area in a middle class neighborhood, and his first instinct was still to draw his gun and shoot. And it's like, why is that your go-to?
Well, and not that this is the case, I'm just, you know, going off the cuff, but I mean, the Somalian wars, he probably is a refugee from that, and so there was a lot of fighting and a lot of just bloodshed in Somalia, and so that could also be, so he could have that heightened, you know, being hyper vigilant and hyper aware of things, which can cause people to react. And if he doesn't have the proper training where he can de-escalate himself, then he had no reason to be a policeman. And so, like, that's a question too. So you mentioned the psychological thing, and it's like, well, maybe that could play a part in it if that was a true statement, because he's been in war, and we all know that that affects the brain. And so that could be, I don't know.
Yeah, and definitely. So to me, it was just like, this is a case that definitely highlights that while, yes, like, African-American people are killed way more, that this is not just a black or white issue. This is an everybody needs to care about this issue, because the police are not being trained as long as they should be, and they're not qualified to handle these stressful situations, and people are losing their lives. Granted, yes, African-Americans are still losing their lives at a way higher rate than white people.
Yes.
Yeah, this is, again, it's happening all over the place. Like, this is the same city just 3 years earlier, and the police killed an unarmed person who was literally asking for their help in this situation. And in such a quick response, right? Like, the other guy had the response, heard the same noise, and drew his gun as well, although he didn't shoot. But then too, this guy reached over from the passenger side, pointed his gun near his fellow police officer's face, and shot a woman in her pajamas.
Yeah, like, that just,
I don't,
it makes no sense. I mean, a lot of police brutality and violence and deaths make no sense to me, because the police are there to de-escalate, and if something criminal is going on, to arrest, not murder. And so I just don't see how there are so many instances where they shoot, like, all the it just seems like it's disproportionate. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that they aren't in, you know, cases where their lives are put in danger, but they also chose a job where their lives could mm-hmm. be in danger. So I don't know. I'm just like, I have a real hard time with the police and the way it is now, as do many people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. And like we just talked about, like, there are moments where we have pause in calling them in potentially, like, dangerous situations or in potentially, like, criminal activity. Like, we don't think about calling them because we don't know how that's going to play out. Because I would feel terrible if I called the police and it turned out to be a misunderstanding and somebody lost their life because of it.
Yeah.
Because the police acted irrationally, like, just quickly. And I feel like that's a huge thing that we see, is that they're almost taught to react in that way. Mm-hmm. And that's not at all how a police officer, like, me and you work in a setting with, like, sometimes people who are developmentally delayed, granted more often children than anything, but mm-hmm. we even had to go through de-escalation training of, like, how to break free without being super aggressive, or how to get out of certain, like, compromising positions, like mm-hmm. if someone's trying to attack you. And if we could sit through that training and remain calm when people are like, I've been in a situation where I've had a parent, like, yell at me and threaten me and be mad at me, and I was still able to remain calm enough to not pepper spray her in the face and to get myself out of the situation. Like, yeah. I mean,
I know.
If I can do it.
Yeah. When I worked at Starbucks, another time I had to call the police a lot at Starbucks, but I didn't behave irrationally when a guy spit in my face and tried to punch me. I had a guy who refused to leave and had a knife and was going to stab us. And yes, we called the police and we got him out of there, but still I remained calm, because if you don't, like, it just mm-hmm. escalates the situation more. And that's mm-hmm. before, like, I became a social worker and everything. And so I have a lot more training now to understand, like, mental health and everything. But it's like, that is the bare, like, I had bare minimum, like, history. That's what I knew. And yeah. I still had the presence of mind. And not that mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't have a gun or anything, so there was nothing I could have poured hot coffee on him, I guess, but,
like, smashed him with a coffee pot or something.
Yeah, with the carafe. Bang. So, but it's like, but then that also begs the question of, like, do you call the cops in that instance? Because, mm-hmm. you know, what's going to happen? Because this guy is also, is having some sort of mental breakdown, or yeah. I don't know what. He was a little bit out there. He also carried a tarantula mm-hmm. as a pet in a McDonald's salad container, so.
Yeah, but that's another whole nother topic, too, is the idea of, like, how police even are treating people with developmental delays and disabilities. Like, because mm-hmm. wasn't it a few years ago there was a man who had, I can't remember if he had autism or something, but he was sitting there with his social worker or something, like his worker, his caretaker. They ended up shooting him on the floor, like on the ground. They were sitting there.
Yeah.
And the guy just was holding a toy, or he was holding something, and they wanted him to put it down because he was a larger man. But it's like, he's not thinking the same way that you and I think. And like, again, going back to situations that police should not be in charge of, which is, again, why we're like, I know I'm a supporter of it, and I'm sure you are too, of defunding the police, mm-hmm. is that We're not saying that we need to get rid of police, because there are definitely situations in which we need them. But if we took all of those other things that they don't need to be like that other professionals need to be handling, like domestic disputes and the homelessness issue and substance abuse, like if we can let other departments handle these things, then the police might not be so trigger happy and might have the time to focus on just a specific set of things that they need to be worried about.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what other profession do you hear of people like this? Or do you hear of like, it's just a few bad apples? Like,
yeah.
No. If there are a few bad apples in the fire department, everyone's house burns down.
Yeah.
If there's a few bad apples in the like piloting, then planes are going to be crashing. I don't know what the career field is called. Aviation? Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Aviation.
Yeah.
Then a bunch of planes are going to be crashing. Nobody ever says, oh, that's okay, they're just a few bad apples. No, because if your ass goes down on that plane, you're not going to be happy about it. Like, it's,
and if there are a few bad apples, then you need to take care of it. And, you know, putting them on leave to investigate with paid leave. You know, there's just so many things. And I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just shouldn't be what's happening today. And again, like, it's just the fact that, yeah, look at what happened in this situation. And I'd be interested, because I know recently, I think it just happened a few days ago, George Floyd's family sued the city because of the violation of civil rights and stuff. So I'm going to keep up to, wow, this week we have episodes we're going to keep up to date on, but
yeah.
I'd be interested to see if the city pays out like it did in this situation. And if it doesn't, that's really fucked up.
Yeah.
That it's not treating the crimes the same way, because there are, I mean, two innocent people got brutally murdered by the police.
Oh, and so that's basically what it is. I feel like every time you go onto any sort of social media platform, there's more and more coming out. And it's just like, oh my gosh, this is no other, like, there's just no other job where everybody's like, okay, yeah, sometimes they kill somebody. It happens.
What? Yeah.
Even like doctors, I mean, if they miss something, they have to have training or it's investigated, they lose their license, you know, there's
Yeah, and it's just like, I mean, why do we hold them to such a different standard when they shouldn't be? They should be treated, and we owe it to them to hold them to that standard too, because they should know, like, just like you want to teach your kids that there are consequences to their actions, you got to teach adults that too sometimes. And you got to hold the police responsible for what they do, not just in Minneapolis but in everywhere. Like, it just ended up being that this was two cases within a few years of each other here, but there are so many more and so many other cases that don't have the justice that Justine got. And in terms, I mean, look at, we still haven't arrested the police officers who killed Breonna Taylor. And that is ridiculous.
That is ridiculous, coming and going into somebody's home. I mean, and just when they were defending themselves, like,
shooting her, I believe she was shot 8 times and they refused medical care for her. That's ridiculous. So, okay, we could talk for a million years about police brutality.
Oh, yeah.
These things,
or
but,
just even recently, the new, the one where, you know, because like with George Floyd and on neck, and he was saying, I can't breathe. And they're always, their responses, if you can talk, you can breathe. Just as somebody that has asthma, I'm getting very little oxygen, but I can still usually talk a little bit. So, no.
Yeah, that's not the same.
No.
That's not the same thing. But regardless, why are you more upset that, like, because obviously he couldn't breathe because he died.
Yeah.
So that's a, first off, that's the stupidest argument ever. But two, why are you so willing to say, well, like, I mean, he did absolutely nothing and totally deserves to have a police officer kneel on his neck. Like, I mean, I just don't understand the logic, and like, I can't. And I'm at the point in a lot of this stuff where, because I know, like, just because people have different political opinions or different beliefs in you doesn't mean you can just write them out of your life. But there are some issues that I do not, I'm not taking that patience. Like, if you do not support Black Lives Matter and you are going to sit there making dumb excuses for the actions of these police officers, I don't need you in my life. Yep. And I'm sorry if that offends anyone who listens to this podcast. I doubt it because we've talked about this stuff.
I know. If they're still coming, going strong, like with us, I feel like they're like, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if this offends you, maybe this isn't the podcast for you. Sorry. Yep.
But I'm okay with that. Bye.
But yeah, like it's one of those, it's a morality issue. It's an everybody issue. Like,
it is.
These are our fellow human beings and they deserve to be treated as such. And the fact that they're not blows my fucking mind. Mm-hmm. Like,
yep.
Fuck. The world's a fucked up place.
I know.
So just know, Black Lives Matter, defund the police, and we got your back.
And you want to hear some of the reason for historic racism with the police and also why they shoot first. Listen to Behind the Bastards podcast. He goes into a lot of that and he's been really spending a lot of his time focusing on that as it's a political, it's a timely conversation. And so I've been following along with that and it'll make you angry. It's so awful. But just listen to, just go to that podcast. So I'll give that podcast a shout out because I listened to that podcast and
Then you can
also hear about historical figures that are bastards and you're just like, these fucking pieces of shit in the world. And a lot of times he does a lot on Trump and Trump's cronies. Little fuckers.
Fucking assholes. So also too, if you're listening to this, please make sure that you register to vote. November is coming up quick, and especially if you're in a state that's going to do mail-in ballots, your due date is even sooner than that because the post office is saying a good a week to get there, a week to get back.
I think it's October 20th that you need to have it submitted by, and also it requires two stamps, not one.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So double check. Make sure your voice is heard. Also, too, I just heard today that the census is trying to cut short in how they reach out to families. They're trying to get everything done, I believe, by September 30th, which is not supposed to be. It's like, a month or two quicker than it's supposed to be, which is going to leave out a lot of the communities that need these numbers the most. So please, 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 if you are in the United States, fill out your census. You can go, I believe it's census.gov. It takes literally less than a minute. If it's just you living on your own, it takes less than a minute to enter your information. And this is information that will benefit you for the next 10 years, especially if you have kids, especially if you live in a lower income community. Do yourself a favor and fill this out. They cannot track your immigration status and they cannot use this information for anything other than to help the funding go back to your communities. So wherever you are in the United States, fill this out. Even if you are somebody who is I believe living here from another country, as long as you are living in the United States as of April 1st, I believe, right? Yeah. Is that the date?
Before April 1st of this year.
Yes. So if you are living in the United States, fill out the census. Double check if you are, I don't know what's happening now with colleges, but double check, make sure you are counted because like I said, this will help out your community for the next 10 years. Fire department funding and parks schools. Department funding, schools, all of it, how they prepare daycares in the area. So if you have a young child who could potentially be in daycare in the next 10 years, you need to be counted. So yes, register to vote, fill out your census, and you're good to go. If you are from another country, sorry we talk about this every week, but it is super important. I am sure you've heard about us on the news, how crazy America is right now. So you understand why this is so important for us, that we need to get these things done.
And honestly, let's be real. We don't understand why we are the way we are. It's frustrating here. And we see that it is ridiculous.
It is. Yep. So we want to do something about it. So up until election day, you are going to hear us probably on every single episode now. Register to vote, fill out your census. If you're tired of hearing it, let us know that you did those things.
I'd be super excited. We would shout out people that told. I'd shout out people who said. I'd be like, look at this person registered to vote. What?
Yeah, look at this person filled out their census. Yep, so there you go. If you email us or message us on Instagram or message us on Facebook saying that you registered to vote and you plan on voting, that's the important part. Don't just register. Get out there. But let us know and we will shout you out in the episode that comes up next after we see your shout out. So yes, we will shout We will shout you out on our podcast if you do those things. Absolutely. Okay. Also, too, if you're international and you're registered to vote, let us know. We'll shout you out.
Heck yeah, we will. Because that's important everywhere.
All right. So we have gone on long enough about all of these cases. So now it is time for our super fun state facts.
And cities.
All right. So, again, don't remember who started last week.
I think you did.
I think I did. Did you want to go ahead and start this week?
Okay, I can. Absolutely. So, as I stated, my city this week was Chisholm, Minnesota. And if in last week's episode, so if you listen to Iowa, I talk about my dad's favorite movie, The Field of Dreams. So I have seen that movie, I don't know, probably 50, 60 times. And not, it's a good movie, but not my choice. My dad just watches it all the time. But in that movie, you have Ray Kinsella and Terrence Mann are going and looking for this baseball player. His name is Archibald Moonlight Graham. Anyway, he's actually a real baseball player. So he was a professional baseball player who actually became a medical doctor. He ended up, he was the right fielder for a single major league game for the New York Giants in June 29th of 1905. So he was popularized in the book Shoeless Joe, so Shoeless Joe Jackson, a novel written by W.P. Kinsella. And then, as I mentioned, he was mentioned in Field of Dreams. So when he became a doctor, after he spent most of his time, well, all of his time except for that one day in the minor leagues, he became the doctor for Chisholm, Minnesota. So he kind of just helped. So he was the doctor for Chisholm Schools, and he was known as Doc. And so in the movie Field of Dreams, they drive their little VW van all the way to Chisholm, Minnesota. So you can watch that in the movie. So that's my fun fact about Chisholm. It was a small town. I was at least there was something.
All right. So my case took place in Minneapolis, and there were a few cool things about this state or about the city of Minneapolis. But what I thought was cool was that Halsey Hall originated the statement "Holy cow" as a home run call on the radio. He was a Minneapolis sports reporter and announcer, so he was the first one to say "Holy cow" as a home run call, long before Harry Carey and Phil Rizzuto, who I believe are also sports reporters. Again, I mean, that sounds
they're baseball.
That's a baseball thing.
Yeah.
Which is more Amber's thing than mine, because baseball's not my sport.
But how funny that both of our fun state or city facts had to do with baseball.
Yeah, also, too, just a heads up, because I said I would look it up, we were talking about the difference between a paramedic and an EMT.
Yes.
Paramedics require more rigorous training. They are the highest level of pre-hospital care, whereas an EMT it takes about, 6 months to become an EMT, and it really just teaches you things like emergency medical care, CPR, bandaging wounds, treating burns, stabilizing fractures, some medicines. But being a paramedic is all the basic life support functions, plus they're certified to perform more advanced life-saving procedures like endotracheal intubation, intravenous access, manual defibrillation. So yeah, so there you go. It's just different certifications for it. And yeah, and then obviously the pay is different.
Of course.
Yeah.
More training, more pay.
Yep. So did you have the state fact this
week? I did. So Minnesota is known as the land of 1,000 lakes. And to go with those lakes, Minnesota has apparently one recreational boat per every 6 people. So for every 6 people, there's a boat. So that's 909,528 boats in Minnesota. Oh, wow. A landlocked country. So I think that's interesting. So, which is more than the population of South Dakota and North Dakota. So just boats. Boats outnumber people.
Yeah. And bonus Minneapolis fact. Did you know out of those lakes, Minneapolis itself has 22 of them?
I did not.
Yeah. Dang. So
just in the city?
In that place. I think so.
How big are these lakes or how big is that city? Interesting.
Well, Minneapolis is I think one of the larger cities, because even though St. Paul is the capital, Minneapolis is the biggest city that's there. So that's pretty cool.
That is. So
yeah,
it looks really pretty. All the pictures I saw of Minnesota looked really pretty, but they also have very cold winter.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Someone, that was while I was looking up my fun facts, someone had even said it's like a wasteland that nobody should ever live, and it's gonna like, it's just a wasteland. And so and this was like back in the 1800s. So Minnesota responded by having like a winter festival there, like where they did like ice skating. They just full on winter blowout to say, suck it. Like,
yeah, we're cool suck too. It. We love our winters.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. So if you're ever on Minnesota, check out them lakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you guys so much for listening. We really appreciate you sticking with us for this long. It's been great telling you all of these really cool stories that, well, again, not really cool, but telling you these stories so that way they are not forgotten. Mm-hmm. So make sure you like and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at SOM Podcast. And also to keep an eye out for when we post our interview that we did this past Saturday. We'll be posting that hopefully soon. Like we said earlier, if you are registered to vote and if you live in the U.S. and have completed the census, send us an email, send us a message, post it on our wall, whatever you want to do, and we will give you a shout out in the next episode. So let us know. Remember, it's really important to do that. Don't forget to check out www.stateofmurder.com for any bonus content. We will be posting links to different things that we've talked about today. I think from now on, we're just going to be putting a link to register to vote in the United States and a link to fill out the census. So we'll be including that as well. So that way you could just check it out there. Same thing on our Instagram. If you click the link in our bio, it will lead you to some support links for the Black Lives Matter movement, as well as a link to register to vote. So yeah, so thank you guys. Next week we are going to be, where are we going to be next week?
Wisconsin,
I think. You think?
No, I'm pretty sure. I'm 98% sure.
Let me see. Wisconsin. Now I gotta look at a map. I keep telling myself, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna buy a map. And then I never buy a big map. So.
Where would you put?
Yes. We are moving back east. We're moving like down to the east a little bit. We're gonna be in Wisconsin. Cool. So we will be in Wisconsin next week. Again, just to sign off. Thank you guys for listening. Don't you know? I didn't do that enough during the episode.
I'm not going to pretend to do it because I don't have good accents.
There are very few accents that I do really, really good. It's that one. My Russian accent isn't terrible. I can't do a British accent, but the Russian, not bad. So, but maybe you guys will get to hear that at some point. I'm not going to do it right now. You got to come back for that.
We like to keep you on your toes. Looking for new things.
On your toes. All right, guys. So we will see you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.